You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast. It is Thursday, December 27th, 2018, the third day of Christmas. I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to it on iTunes or Spotify, and please leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Well, I gave myself the first and second days of Christmas off, so thank you for bearing with us. It's the holiday season, trying to just relax and enjoy it with family. So, you know, as I told you, this week's schedule was a bit sporadic, but we'll have a show today, and we should have a show tomorrow to preview the season finale for the Jets. You know, and one of my frustrations with the Christmas holiday, and this is why I need a podcast about wider-ranging topics, other sports, other teams, you know, culture, society in general. Is, you know, one of my frustrations with our culture is just, in other countries, like December 25th is the beginning of the Christmas celebration, and here it's like it's over. Like, the Christmas songs go off the radio, you know, decorations start coming down on the 26th, and I just wish we would do it. I just wish we would extend the holiday a little bit longer, because January is always like my least favorite month of the year because it's so dark outside. You know, it's so cold. And, you know, we should extend Christmas as long as we can, because Christmas, you know, even though the days are short this time of year, at least you have the lights out. At least, you know, there's a little holiday cheer in the air. But anyway, so that's the end. You can listen to that if I ever get a new podcast, or you can hear all of my genius thoughts on everything under the sun. Anyway, we're going to do a mailbag show today. These are questions submitted to us in the comment section of gangrenenation.com. Thanks to everybody who submitted the questions. I think it's one of those weeks where there are just too many to get to all of them, but we'll try and get to as many as we can. So our first question is, John, if in the upcoming draft the Jets are faced with a choice of filling a position of obvious need with a player who has a lower ceiling, or selecting a player from a position that's less of need but with a higher ceiling, where would you go? For example, 2019 looks to be a good year for tight ends and interior linemen. Would you take one over a wideout, edge rusher, or somebody with less upside? It's painfully evident that this roster is devoid of high-end talent and depth, but there are tons of holes to fill outside of quarterback and possibly safety. That's a good question there. So I think it depends on the degrees. It depends on how big the gap in talent is. You know, I think in general, if the gap is small, and we're talking, and I think interior linemen's a need. I really do. I don't like any of these guys the Jets have on the interior line. So I would put that as a need. But to me, the two positions the Jets have to look to address are offensive line and edge rusher. So it depends. Is the gap small? If the gap's small, then I'd say you go to the position of need. I don't think you can ever go into a draft saying, I am definitely taking a player at X position with this first round pick no matter what, because that's how you make mistakes. Because, you know, let's say the choice is between the next Eric Flowers and a guy who plays, a guy who plays a position of lesser need who's going to be really good, you take the guy who plays the position of lesser need. You know, you don't just draft a guy because he plays a certain position if the guy's not going to be any good. But the other thing with the Jets, as you mentioned, is, I mean, what's not a hole for this team? What's not a position that could stand to be upgraded over the long haul outside of, you know, quarterback or safety? So I think there's more that goes into it. There's no blanket answer. Again, it depends on how big the gap is. You know, if I get a guy who's going to be, you know, a superstar tight end versus a guy who's going to be a very good edge rusher, a guy who's going to put up consistent 10 sack seasons, probably make some Pro Bowls, I probably would go with the edge rusher, because then, you know, the value of what you're getting, you know, filling the need at the important position, that's what comes into play. The two positions I'm targeting again are offensive line and edge rusher. So it's not so much I'm taking those guys no matter what, but there needs to be a good reason I'm not drafting those positions. There needs to be a guy who's so good that you can't pass him up. And there needs to be nobody who's worth their value at offensive line or edge rusher at the point I'm drafting. So it depends. I think, as always, it depends. It's tough to answer. It's tough to give definitive answers on, you know, situations that are still kind of hypothetical, because I think that there's an answer that fits every situation. Next question. A lot of people say that the Jets should trade down for additional draft picks, but with the slim pickings at the top quarterback and other positions, I'm not sure that unless we are drafting somewhere between 1 and 3 that we'll have much of an opportunity to trade down, even if we wanted to do so. I realize that things have to play themselves out over week 17, but I was wondering what your thoughts at this point on what the Jets could/should do. So I actually don't agree with the idea that the Jets have to be in the top three. I guess that's the reason I'm not as crazy about tanking as a lot of people are, because you just never know. And, you know, think back to 2 years ago. Like, that's the example I'll give you. And I'll have to admit, I was one of the people who was saying this 2 years ago. Remember how everybody was saying it was a weak quarterback year? Remember that? And everybody said there's no quarterback worth trading up for. And look who has come out of that. You have Patrick Mahomes, who could be the most valuable player in the NFL. I mean, what a talent. I mean, that guy's just fun to watch. I love watching that guy. Then you have Deshaun Watson, who's off to a really good start to his career. And I mean, Trubisky, who I'm not as high on, but is having a good statistical year. But just, I'll throw Trubisky out because I'm not a fan of him. But I am a fan of Mahomes, and I am a fan of Watson. And remember, 2 years ago, everybody said it was a weak quarterback class. And, you know, who knows, it's still too early to crown anybody the next great quarterback. Sometimes careers don't continue to progress the way we'd like them to. But at this point, you have to say there are two guys who look like they're going to be really good quarterbacks in this league who came out of that class. And by the way, those guys got traded, you know, teams traded up for them. And here's the other thing. When the Chiefs traded up for Mahomes, they didn't trade into the top three. So you never know where you're going to be. And I think the Texans traded up for Watson too. I understand the argument that, you know, you maximize your value if you're in the top three, but sometimes it's better to be low if you want to trade down, because a team like the Chiefs weren't going to trade it. The Chiefs didn't have the ammo or they didn't have the interest to trade into the top three. You know, they didn't want to give up everything it took to get into the top three that year. They were willing, if Mahomes fell a little bit further, then they wouldn't have to pay as big of a price to move down. So they were willing to make that deal. So you never know. And that's the thing. That's one of the reasons I'm not as crazy about tanking as other people, is that you can get out of the top three and trade down. And even in a year where it looks like a bad quarterback, sometimes the consensus in the draft rooms is not the same as the consensus among fans. You know, and again, it only takes one team to fall in love with a quarterback. So that's a lot of good cliches for you in the last 30 seconds here. But I think that it's certainly plausible the Jets could trade down. I understand your point, but I think the way things actually work sometimes surprise you. Sometimes it surprises you. Sometimes you think you're not in a position to trade down, and it just depends on the players available. It depends on the teams, on their views. So still a lot to be determined in the draft. So I think it's too early to be concerned about something like that. Our next question. If Mike Maccagnan is not fired, do we as a fan base still have a reasonable reason to be optimistic about this team's future? Now, listen, I do think that the Jets should make a change at the GM position. I think they'd be making a huge mistake if they did not make a change. I'd be very frustrated, and you're going to hear me complain about it on Monday. And frankly, based on some of the reports we're hearing, it sounds like that may be the direction we're heading in. I think it'd be a wrong decision, and I'd be very worried about what's going to happen with Sam. Is Sam going to be the next Andrew Luck, where they can't surround him with talent? But your question is, do we still have a reasonable reason to be optimistic about the future? Absolutely. No question about it. This team's future looks a lot brighter because of Sam Darnold. You know, getting the quarterback is half the battle. Sam's going to be a really good one. I mean, I really think the sky is the limit for him. Like I told you, I watched this game with my uncle, my aunt, and my cousin. They're all big Jets fans. And the game last week against Green Bay, and they were asking me, well, what do you think of this guy? Because, you know, they know I do this stuff. And I said, before the draft, this was the guy I wanted. I think that he's going to be a great quarterback in this league. And, you know, look, Maccagnan's only going to be guaranteed 2019. You know, the team could still make a change. Now, I think the team is setting its future behind by not doing this. And of course, there are the scenarios where Maccagnan actually gets better, you know, and sometimes that happens. Sometimes after 4 years on the job, something clicks. That's not something I would count on, which is the reason I make the change. But there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic about the future. It doesn't mean Maccagnan's going to be around, you know, another decade. I think it just means that he's going to be around another year at least, maybe two. So, you know, I'm not going to say that the future, that everything is ruined for the future, but I understand, and I will be frustrated if they don't make a change, because I think there are plenty of reasons to make a change. I think they'd be making a huge mistake. And I think they deserve a lot of criticism if they don't make a change. But to say that the future is not, to say that the future is totally bleak, well, the future is, I don't know if the future is partially bleak, but in spite of the frustration, there's still reason to be excited. There's still reason to be optimistic. So, you know, I wouldn't go as far as to say the future's ruined, but I'd say the future is something that it's not so much the future. Fans should be frustrated, but they shouldn't lose all hope. Next question: how much has McCagnan's scouting team changed since he's been with the Jets? I mean, he fired 8 people his first year. Within the first few months, he fired 8 people. Some of them were senior. You know, you look at the key people who he brought in, you know, whether it's his right-hand man, Heimerdinger, with director of college scouting. I mean, I think the senior positions have all turned over. The one person who I think was here was Jackie Davidson, who handles the salary cap. But, you know, even 4 years in, I mean, if you have retained somebody for 4 years, that means they're McCagnan's person. So, I mean, this is McCagnan's scouting staff. I mean, he came right in and he fired 2 key people. He fired his director of college scouting, and he fired Terry Bradway, who was a senior college scout. I think that was his title. So, I mean, he fired 2 people right off the bat, 2 important people right before his first draft, which is, as I understand it, kind of unusual. Usually you wait till after the draft to make changes. And I talked about this on a recent show, is the front office year cycle, the front office year is different from the rest of the league. You know, the rest of the league, it's essentially ends the day your season ends. Whereas in the front office, the year ends when the draft ends, and that's when the process for scouting the next draft begins. So he's got his people in place. I think that that's pretty clear. And again, if you are around for 4 years after a change, you become their guy. You're there because that GM wants you to be there 4 years in. Next question: how can you identify GM candidates? What areas do teams look for? Are there any big names out there in the moment? Coaches are easier to track. How can fans see potential GM candidates? Well, you know, you have to kind of read the insiders if you're just a fan. It's trickier. It's tougher than coaches, because coaches at least have a clear body of work. And sometimes I think it's easy to overanalyze what a coach has done. You know, you see a quarterback's coach whose quarterbacks are struggling, you say, well, that guy's not a good... Well, sometimes it's not that simple. You know, sometimes it's just the player is not that good. But there's a body of work. If you see a guy who, you know, is a position coach and he's constantly developing good talent, he goes and becomes a coordinator and his teams produce, you know, his teams are near the top of the league, you say, well, that guy's a pretty clear coaching candidate, because there's a body of work you can evaluate him on. You could say everywhere he's been successful. Now, that does not always translate, because the skills for a good head coach are different from the skills of a coordinator, different from the skills of a position coach. There's at least something you can go on there with coaches. In the front office, you don't really have a lot to go on, because we don't see the inner workings of these front offices. So you kind of just have to go on based on what insiders around the league say. And that's the reason relationships are so important in the NFL. You know, GMs, they know each other, they trust each other. You know, you have friends across the league. You have to kind of talk to them and find out who the good people are. You know, who are the good people owners know each other, so they have to know who to talk to. You know, your owner needs to know who to talk to within, you know, the Texans organization or the, you know, whatever, the Packers organization. And who's the next guy who's going to be a good GM in your organization? That's the reason relationships are so important, because you have to know who the references are, who knows the next great guy. So that's how teams do it. It's through relationships, because there's no obvious body of work. I think what happens with fans is fans typically look for the best teams in the league, and they look for their assistant. You know, who's the assistant GM on that team? Because that's what you go on. You go on who are the good teams, because there's nothing obvious. So you just gravitate toward the team that's doing something right. You want somebody from that organization. But, you know, it's not always so simple. So, I mean, I guess my best advice would be read Sports Illustrated, read Schefter's tweets. You know, those are people talking to people. Read the people who are talking to people in the league. You know, who is viewed across the league as the next great general manager candidate. Next question. This will be the last game where these uniforms will be the custom for the Jets. With that being said, what's your favorite memory under these Hunter Green old-school unis, whether it's on the road or at home? What did you think of Parcells bringing these uniforms back in 98? Also, what do you hope to see from the new uniform? Stay with Hunter Green, go back to Kelly Green, go to a new shade of green, add black or a third color. What do you want to see from the old logo? Should we retain the old-school font for the numbers, or do you think Nike's going to ruin the font like they have done for the Buccaneers, Jaguars, and other old uniforms? So, lots of good questions there. My favorite memory in these uniforms, I think I'd go back to 02 and just the three-game stretch the Jets had at the end of the year with Pennington, where they go into New England and beat the Patriots and Brady and Belichick. Then they crush the Packers with Favre at home to make the playoffs. And then in the wild card game, they go out and crush the Colts with Peyton Manning. And I have fond memories of that because it's one of the few times where I really felt like the Jets were heading places. I felt like the Jets' future was set. So even though things did not pan out in the Pennington era quite like we wanted, that's kind of like my I'll always remember those fond, I'll always remember that fondly, where it at least seemed like the Jets were on track for something special with that young quarterback. What did I think of Parcells bringing these uniforms back? Well, I'm biased because my dad loved it, and that was so I'm kind of influenced by my dad on that. My dad thought it was the greatest. My dad hated Parcells because Parcells was a giant, but you know, he always said if I wanted to root for the Giants, I'd root for the real thing. So, you know, my dad was never a big Parcells guy, except, you know, even he was happy they made the AFC Championship game in 98, but I think he was kind of frustrated by that hire. But I always loved the idea that they were wearing uniforms that were similar to the ones they've worn in the Namath days, and that's why I'm a little down on the idea that they're changing. What do I hope to see from the new school uniforms? And the logo, and should they retain? Look, I want to retain as much of this uniform as possible, because I'm going to tell you something. These new uniforms in the NFL, unless they're like a retro look, unless you're going back to an old school look, which Jets already have the old school look, but unless you're going back to an old school look, I think these uniforms are all terrible. So I'm worried about this. I'm worried about how they're going to look, and I'm going to blame everybody who kept calling for new uniforms if these uniforms look ugly. I'm blaming you. I'm telling you, I'm blaming you, and I've warned you about this. You kept complaining, you kept banging the table for new uniforms. Well, these new uniforms are ugly. That's on you. That's on you. You'll never hear the end of it. Our next question. Let's fantasize and imagine a world in which the Johnsons are smart enough to fire McCagnan. Are there any available coaches to whom you give coach GM authority? I actually have changed my mind on this. A few years ago, I actually advocated the idea of doing something like that for Jim Harbaugh, but I'm actually kind of down on this idea. My thinking on this has evolved. I don't think there are, because the coaches, and I'm at the risk of a broad overgeneralization, coaches tend to only think of the short term, whereas the GM needs to think of the long term. The coaching mindset is what helps me today, even if it hurts me in the long term. So I think you need somebody who, as a GM, who thinks longer term. And that's kind of where you find the balance in your organization. Your GM's thinking long term, your coach is thinking about today. And together, hopefully, if you have a good tandem, you'll be able to do well today and do well over the long term. So, you know, I'm not crazy about that idea. Second part of the question asked if who would I like to see as the next GM, if not. You know, there are a couple names. Duke Tobin in Cincinnati is always a name who pops up. He's a guy. The reason I like Duke Tobin is that the Bengals are a notoriously cheap organization. They have no facilities, so they can't. It's tough to attract. They won't pay for free agents. Even if they would, their facilities stink. They're very cheap. They don't hire scouts. I mean, they're for a long time only three scouts in that organization, and they've still done a great job building talent through the draft. So if that guy can build talent through the draft with those resources, what can he do on a team that has actual resources? Another guy is Elliot Wolf, who's the son of the Hall of Famer Ron Wolf, kind of working his way up. He's in the Cleveland organization now, so it's another guy I'd be interested in. Scott McGlowan, of the former Washington GM, is another guy who would interest me. He's a very respected personnel guy, and sounds like he was run out of Washington for reasons that really have nothing to do with anything other than the owner being kind of a dope. Now McLuhan has a few personal demons, but he did a good job in Washington, I think. So those are three names I'd start with, and you know, I'll probably get back to you if the Jets do make a change, and I'd research this a little bit more. But that's probably where I'd start. Next question: there were reports that Maccagnan was on board with approaching Jim Harbaugh. Does that mean Maccagnan's definitely staying if Harbaugh is willing to come, but only if he gets to pick his GM? And Mac is going. Is a condition for the job? Will Chris Johnson tell him, "Sorry, we made a commitment to Mac, and he has to stay, even if that means he doesn't get the coach"? Well, the whole thing with Maccagnan being on board with Harbaugh, the reports I've read, and these are just reports, so, you know, there are lots of rumors this time of year. It's kind of like Maccagnan's just thinking, like, all right, well, I don't have a lot of leverage right now, so I guess I have to. And honestly, in a situation like that where Harbaugh comes on board, I find it tough to – I think that's bad news for Maccagnan, because Harbaugh is going to become the most important person in the organization. I mean, Jim Harbaugh is not coming here to report directly to Mike Maccagnan. I would be surprised. Maybe – I feel like I could be wrong on these things, but I find it tough to believe that Jim Harbaugh is going to leave Michigan. First, I don't think the Jets are getting Harbaugh anyway, but if in a world where Harbaugh is going to leave Michigan, I really doubt he's going to want to come work for Mike Maccagnan, which means you're going to have I think you can have a situation like you had in Oakland where they hire John Gruden, GM Reggie McKenzie stays, but McKenzie's wings have been clipped. You know, he doesn't really have the final sway because the team's invested so much in the new coach, and eventually Maccagnan leaves the organization. And I think that would be kind of a silly way to that's one of the reasons to fire Maccagnan, because if you're going to do that, you might as well just fire him. But do I think that the Jets would say no, Maccagnan stays? Look, if you're going to make Jim Harbaugh the highest coach in the league, I doubt Mike Maccagnan's going to get in the way of you doing that if you're the owner. So I think Maccagnan's gone if that's one of Harbaugh's conditions. But I think the more likely scenario is that the Jets just kind of keep Maccagnan and his influence wanes as Harbaugh kind of takes control of the organization. And, you know, maybe in a year or two, Maccagnan makes his exit. That's probably my guess. And if that's going to happen, you might as well just make the clean break now and bring in people Harbaugh wants. You might as well just do that now. Next question: the popular coaching candidates seem to be classified in three groups. One, the hotshot offensive coordinator, first-time head coach, who will bring in an exciting offense but is an unknown quantity for defense and special teams. Two, the college head coaches who run balanced discipline programs, see like David Shaw and Matt Campbell. Three, the retreads who are basically known quantities at this point. Of these categories, which do you like to prefer? Not necessarily asking you who your favorite candidate is, but which category would you be most excited about? I'm actually, and this is something that I've changed with over time, and again, like I always try to avoid generalizing. But if you're asking, but since you asked, I've changed over time. I actually like the college guys now. And 10 years ago, I always say, 10 years ago, I was very much against hiring college candidates, because it was a long time in the NFL where most of the college candidates failed. But I like the college candidates. And I'm not sure if Shaw or Campbell are necessarily my guy, but there are a couple of reasons I like the college candidates. First is, and this doesn't necessarily apply to Shaw or Campbell, but other college candidates, that's where the innovation tends to come from when you're talking offense. I mean, that's where the Chiefs get a lot of their stuff. It's from the college game where, you know, there's less pressure. Like, if you're at a small school, you have to figure out some ways to win. You know, you have to figure out ways to overcome your talent deficiencies. So you make innovations on offense, because that's the only way you can compete when you're not as good as the other team. So that's one. And again, that's not necessarily Shaw or Campbell, but those are guys I like that, because that's where the new stuff comes from, the new age offenses come from. The other reasons I like the college guys at this point are just the new CBA. And I think the CBA in 2011 was a game changer, because it so limits your practice time. And in college, you're very limited in the amount of time you can practice with your players. So college coaches, and I think it's been a struggle for NFL coaches. I think NFL coaches have kind of struggled with the practice limitations, whereas that's something that's been around college for decades. You know, college coaches have had to deal with that for a long time, deal with the practice limitations. So there's no adjustment. And college coaches are really focused on developing talent, because they get these young players from high school who don't really know how to play the game. Some of them need to change their positions. So college coaches are used to developing young talent. So, and this is, again, my mind has changed. I think a lot of it has to do with the new CBA. But I think if all things are equal, college is where I'm looking for. I want a college guy a guy with experience as a head coach in the college game. So, again, doesn't necessarily mean, as you mentioned, doesn't necessarily mean that my number one candidate is from college. But I think if all things are equal, that's generally the profile I'm looking for. Thank you for listening today. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you like the show, subscribe, iTunes, Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Hope you have a great Thursday. We'll talk again soon.